Hub
and Spoke Audio Collective.
Hi, we're back with a second episode about the endlessly fascinating Icelandic language. And in this installment, an existential question. If you didn't hear the first episode, I gave it the title Icelandic, the language that recycles everything. It's about what makes Icelandic so much of an outlier, in Europe at least, when it comes to language evolution. Here's a quick recap. Icelandic has changed far more slowly than most languages do. Of course, Iceland is an island nation, and until recently, a pretty inhospitable one, wedged up against the Arctic Circle. In that sense, it's not surprising that the language has changed so little. There just wasn't much coming and going. But now, there's a ton of coming and going. And that's when you'd expect Icelandic to just import words from English and other languages. But Icelanders have long resisted that. When they needed a word to describe something new, telephone, television, podcast, they consulted their back catalogue, starting with the Icelandic sagas, which were written down in the 13th and 14th centuries. They find words that have fallen out of use, and then they recycle them, combining them with other words, creating new modern meanings. That, in a minute, was the first episode. Give it a listen. So now, the existential question at the heart of this episode. 100 years from now, will people even be speaking Icelandic? From Quiet Juice and the Linguistic Society of America, this is Subtitle, stories about languages and the people who speak them. What happens to a language that draws on its past when globalization and the future come knocking?
I think Icelandic is not going to last. I think we will probably in this century adopt English as our language. I think so.
Yikes! How could it be that Icelanders might just switch to English? And if Icelandic disappears, how many other languages that we may think of as stable and established, how many of them could be imperiled? The interviews in this episode are from a few years ago, which only means that doomsday for these languages could be that much closer. Or perhaps not.
Zuzana Stankovičeva is from Slovakia. For the past few years, she's lived in Reykjavik, studying the Icelandic language. Pretty early on, she sensed that Icelanders had strong feelings about their language. So, for her master's thesis, she devised a survey to test this. She asked Slovaks and Icelanders to define their nationality. Most of the Slovaks said,
I am Slovak because my parents are Slovak.
Or, because I was born in Slovakia. Ties to the land, family ties.
With the Icelanders, the language came up very often the first position. I am Icelandic because I speak Icelandic.
The language means that much. Most adult Icelanders recall learning this song at school. It's called Land, Nation and Tongue. The poem it's based on was written in 1952, when Iceland was a brand new nation.
Land, nation and tongue was a divine trinity, not the divine trinity, but on a similar level as that.
Linguist Ari Pautel Christensen says this was the patriotic belief instilled in him as a child. The country was nothing without its language.
If we lost the Icelandic language, there would be no Icelandic nation, and if there's no Icelandic nation, there's no Icelandic sovereignty.
Iceland only won full sovereignty during World War II. The Divine Trinity was finally in place. But almost immediately, there was a challenge to the language, though it wasn't recognized at the time. It came in the form of 40,000 US troops who were stationed in Iceland during the war. The US military didn't completely leave until 2006. By then, most Icelanders spoke fluent English alongside their native tongue.
English is everywhere now, from the moment we wake up until we die.
I think Icelandic is not going to last.
Jón Gnarr is a former mayor of Reykjavik.
I think we will probably in this century adopt English as our language. I think so.
Really? I mean, I imagine there would be a lot of Icelanders who would be extremely worried about that, that they
yes.
would see the language as an absolute central part of national identity and their own identity.
Yes, it is. But I think it's unavoidable.
It's the usual story. Urbanization, air travel, satellite TV, the internet. Every nation has been changed by these things, but Iceland more so, more quickly. Gone was the isolation that had done so much to protect the language.
When I was growing up, very few people spoke English. With my generation and with television and music, it became necessary to understand English. And now with, for instance, in the case of my children, they speak much better English than I do. And most of their activity, for instance, on Facebook is in English because they have friends in different countries. So they express themselves in English, but they don't speak as good Icelandic as I do. So it's drastic change in a very short time.
Language purists, and there are many in Iceland, they believe that the best chance for survival would be to resist importing words from English and to hang on to the language's archaic and complicated grammar. That, after all, is what makes Icelandic unique. If it ends up sounding like other languages, then people would be less inclined to value it. That's the argument.
I think that people are, especially older people, I think, are very skeptical of the use of English.
This is Larissa Kaiser, an American who lives in Reykjavik and studies Icelandic.
I think there's a big push to make people proud of it as a language. The after-school program where I work has all these posters up on the wall now that are, you know, Icelandic is our mother tongue. And I had a teacher who would ask her children, she said that they could swear all they wanted as long as they used Icelandic swear words.
There's nothing like the sweet taste of transgression. After the break, a couple of possible future scenarios for Icelandic. This is the final episode of this season. We'll be back at some point, not quite sure when. But I know that in the meantime, there is no shortage of other podcasts to listen to. But if you'd like to keep up with all things subtitle, consider subscribing to our newsletter. Here's what you get. We pick out a couple of our favorite language-related news stories. We recommend other podcasts. And there's some goofy lingo stuff too. Plus, we'll give you a heads up on what's in the works for the next subtitle season. We won't inundate you. Just pop a little something into your inbox every 2 or 3 weeks. And of course, like this podcast, it's free. You can sign up at subtitlepod.com/newsletter. That's subtitlepod.com/newsletter.
So where is Icelandic headed? There are several possibilities. Here are two. The first draws on Icelanders' reverence for storytelling, from the sagas of old to the extraordinary number of writers today. Some linguists believe that the tipping point for Icelandic, the moment that it might truly leave the hearts of Icelanders, would be when the country's poets and novelists stop writing in Icelandic. Sverrir Norland has some experience of this.
There wasn't really any plan.
No plan at all. He just wanted to improve his writing. So the young Icelander left his home country for a creative writing course in London.
And for obvious reasons, I had to write in English.
First, it felt fake. Then liberating, which reminded him of a quote attributed to Björk, the musician.
She said something like, "When I first started singing in English, I felt like I was lying." And that's a terrible thing, but at the same time, it's beautiful. You can be whomever you want to be.
Like, you don't have to be Icelandic anymore. Norland didn't go that far. In fact, he's writing in Icelandic again these days. But would he ever write more fiction in English? Not out of the question, he says. And he's not alone in thinking that. So that's the first possibility, that more writers may switch to English, sending a powerful message to their readers in Iceland. Here's the second possibility. It's a rosier picture. Immigration may give Icelandic a boost. In this restaurant, in the tiny town of Fludir, on the other side of a mountain range from Reykjavik, Azib Karsai roasts coffee beans on an open flame. Karsai co-owns this restaurant. She's from Ethiopia. Her native tongue is Amharic.
How do you say that?
Yibigtus.
Karsai has lived in Iceland for 7 years.
I'm more Icelandic perfect, not English.
So you're better at Icelandic than English?
Yeah.
You're probably the only Amharic speaker who is better at Icelandic than English.
Yeah.
Icelanders admire immigrants who've mastered their language. But at the same time, traditionalists worry that non-native speakers may alter Icelandic. If that's the case, bring it on, says another Icelandic novelist, Oyther Ava Olafsdottir.
I'm looking very much forward to the time when immigrants start to write literature in their vision of Icelandic, their understanding of creating new words. And that's how language should be, alive, creative, inventive.
Just like the language of the sagas many centuries ago, says Olafsdottir. She, by the way, is fluent in several languages, but says she would only ever write in her mother tongue.
I think the world needs stories told in Icelandic.
Which is just what Olafsdottir does. I've read one of her novels. It's called Butterflies in November. It really is an Icelandic tale. Funny, sad, not at all sentimental, but epic. Or maybe mock epic. You feel the influence of the sagas. I can't attest to how much of all of this has to do with it being written in Icelandic. I read an English translation.
What's so interesting about languages is that you can't translate everything. For instance, we have got this word in Icelandic, skárri. And you can only translate it as better in English. But in fact, it means that you're confronted to two bad choices, two bad options. But one of it is slightly better. And that is something that happens often it's part of our mentality. It happens often. You can find this in the old literature. The heroes are confronted to some difficulties, something that might be fatal, and there is one option that is slightly better, skárri.
I suppose the English equivalent here would be the lesser of two evils, but we don't have a single word for it. It doesn't mean that much to us. It doesn't figure as predominantly as skárri. It's a nice example of how writing in Icelandic may better help convey what it is to be Icelandic. Sverre Norland, the writer who was briefly writing in English but now is back writing in Icelandic, he looks at this in a slightly different way.
I mean, if I'm telling a story in Icelandic, I'm thinking about Icelandic people, Icelandic readers, and I'm kind of assuming that they share a similar background and they have the same kind of knowledge about the stuff I'm talking about. But if I'm writing in English about Icelandic people, I would be explaining all kinds of different things, and, you know, so it just turns out very differently, I think.
So, that leaves the language in the care of Icelanders for sure, but also with the increasing cohort of foreigners in Iceland, people like Larissa Kaiser, learning this not altogether useful, tiny language.
What happens when you tell people back in the United States what you're doing?
Because it's Icelandic, people are generally really interested that I'm here and I'm doing this. The language side people kind of regard as kind of crazy, but it seems like a very romantic adventure. So mostly it's been a very positive response.
I don't know now, but I imagine that some people might even think of Icelandic as being something that people don't speak anymore.
Yeah, I think it's, in some ways, I think people's closest association, and this is just a generalization, but people think of Elvish, for instance, and J.R.R. Tolkien. And it seems like this mystical language that people in real life don't actually speak, or it's a very small amount of people, obviously. So it's clear that I'm not doing this for practical reasons in terms of like communicating with a large group of people, which is both good and bad.
I think it's all good, really. Not bad in the slightest bit. And I suspect Larissa does too. You could say she's doing her bit to bring the Icelandic language to the rest of the world even more these days. She's now one of the most prominent and prolific literary translators of Icelandic into English. And as long as Larissa has novels and poetry and essays to translate, Icelandic may just be fine. I mean, doesn't it come down to whether Icelanders continue to feel the urge to express themselves in their native tongue? It may even be that that native tongue will find a way of coexisting with English in ways that we can't quite conceive of now. And this applies to many countries and regions within countries that are preparing to confront versions of this. There'll probably be different approaches, different accommodations of outside languages. As for Icelandic, I, for one, hope that Jón Knarr, the former mayor of Reykjavik, I hope he's wrong. I hope that people still are speaking the language. Jón Knarr, I should say, recently ran unsuccessfully for president of Iceland. He's a deeply serious person, but also a very funny one. Before becoming mayor, he was an actor and comedian. I did a long, very entertaining interview with him, which maybe I'll include some bits from in the next subtitle season. Thanks to everyone who talked to me about Icelandic in this and in the previous episode. And while we're at it, thanks to everyone who agreed to submit to my often rambling and unfocused questions during this entire season. Thanks to Alison Shaw, who writes the subtitle newsletter and manages our social media. Thanks also to Tina Toby, Kavita Pillay, and Nina Porzuki. And a tip of the cap to the World Public Radio program, PRX, and Studio NOLA. Subtitle is a member of the Hub and Spoke Audio Collective. We're a bunch of independently minded podcasters, all of us intensely curious about something. It may be science or tech or our local community or the visual arts or language. So, drumroll. I'm going to name all the other Hub and Spoke podcasts, every one of them worth your listening time. Out There, Rumblestrip, The Lonely Palette, Ministry of Ideas, Soonish, The Briny, Iconography, Mementos, Nocturne, Open Source, and Print is Dead, Long Live Print. Check them out at hubspokeaudio.org. Don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter for news about what we're up to and when we'll be back. And please rate and review us wherever you're listening to this. Thanks for listening all the way to the end of this episode and to the end of the season. We'll be back at some point in the not too distant future.
Hub
and Spoke. Audio Collective.